Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to my radio show, Live Your Music. I'm Margot Joy Denader, and I'm broadcasting from Marin County, California. My guest for today's show is Nancy Anderson. Nancy Anderson is a career and life consultant in the San Francisco Bay Area, and she's the author of the best-selling career book, Work with Passion, How to Do What You Love for a Living. The book was first published in 1984, and a 20th anniversary edition was published in 2004. Work with Passion in Midlife and Beyond, Reach Your Full Potential and Make the Money You Need, her latest book, was published in 2010. Nancy was a Regent Scholar at the University of California, Riverside, where she graduated with an interdisciplinary degree in English and political science. Following graduation, Nancy co-founded two career consulting firms in San Francisco and then established her own practice. She has had her own radio show on KGO, has been interviewed on Good Morning America, Between the Lines, CNN, ABC, NBC, and CBS affiliates on the West Coast, as well as radio shows across the country. Nancy continues to enjoy using her intuitive and practical approach to help clients find the right niche in their work. To connect with Nancy Anderson online, visit her website at www.workwithpassion.com. Welcome, Nancy.
Well, thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm so happy to have you on my show today. Woohoo!
Little do they know you.
Yeah, I mean, we have had such a challenge getting this show together, everyone who's listening, because of technology and the challenges of technology. The show is being done on Friday instead of my usual Wednesday. And thank you, Nancy, for being flexible and rescheduling for today when technology was not working. Oh, my God, I love doing these shows, but it can really be a challenge when the technology and the computers is not working. Well, anyway, on with today. I just wanted to say that I first met you almost 30 years ago when your original book, Work with Passion, How to Do What You Love for a Living, came out. And you had I set up an appointment to go see you, and you had us, as an exercise in the book, write a little bio thing. And if you want to tell a little bit about that, it was really a powerful thing to do that and to also tell us why you suggest doing that.
Yeah, the autobiography is the first step that I have my clients do. Not the whole thing at first, because doing the whole thing and sending it to me before we meet is pretty overwhelming for both of us. So I usually suggest my clients just follow the outline in whichever book that they purchase and right up until about the age 14, starting with the grandparents. And the reason why I start with the grandparents, because way back when I first started, I didn't used to use such an extensive autobiography. It was just sort of a, well, tell me about what you liked when you were young, you know, the typical career counseling stuff. And my clients just kept coming back to me with the same problems. You know, they find a job and everything, because the second half of both books is very clear about how to do that. But then the same problems would start to emerge, authority issues primarily, and that they just weren't happy. So I thought, well, I must be doing something wrong. So because my background is as a writer, I decided to have my clients go back two generations and tell me the whole story. And that was when I really began to understand the patterns about work and money that are passed down through the generations about, you know, you're not supposed to enjoy your work, you're supposed to be miserable, and then do what you want to do when you retire, if you're still alive, that is.
So
lots and lots of things came to me that I could address, the drinking that went on in a lot of families, the drugging, all of these things that my clients weren't even aware of, that because they just, like my first client, when I asked him to do this, Margot, he said, well, what has this got to do with my career? You know, because at that time, even today, most career counselors don't do this. You know, but I know that unless I have the autobiography, I'm like a doctor operating without an x-ray. And so that's really what it is. It's an x-ray into the background of a person. And if they're honest with me, you know, tell me what really happened back there. Don't give me the sugar-coated version, because, you know, most of us have families that were dysfunctional and some of them highly dysfunctional, and I need to know that in order to know what I'm up against. So, yeah, the autobiography prepares me to be realistic and to talk to my clients about what may be interfering with them and doing what it is that they really love. And often a lot of it is not that they don't know what they want to do as much as they don't really feel at a very deep level. They're pretty numb emotionally.
Wow. Yeah, I remember when I had written it and I went to talk to you about it, it really did help me start to understand what I enjoyed about the work I was doing at the time, and helped me understand also some of the things that the work I was doing at the time wasn't allowing me to do. And one of the things that I loved about, actually probably the main thing I loved about what I was doing at the time, I was working as a hairdresser at the time, I loved working with the people. I loved talking to the people. Mm-hmm. But what I didn't love is I didn't love the chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. I didn't love the chemicals, and I didn't really care that much about their hair. I mean, not their hair at first, but about hair in general. You know what I mean?
Right,
it's like,
right.
What I really cared about was who they were on the inside.
Mm.
And that became very clear to me when my brother had given me a book called Success Through a Positive Mental Attitude by Napoleon Hill and W. Clement Stone way back when I first was learning how to cut hair. I started realizing that it was who the person was on the inside, the way they chose to think. That's what I liked about it. And what I've realized, too, is that all of the work that I've ever enjoyed the most, I get to talk to people. The work that I enjoy the least is when I don't get to.
Well, see, talking is the issue. It's just, and you know, many times, Margo, the reason why people don't do what they want to do for a living, because they were criticized when they were little. Like, one of my clients is sort of like you, where he was always told, you know, you talk too much, just be quiet. And
mm-hmm.
so he winds up in a profession where he's talking a lot. But see, he felt guilty about his desire to talk because he'd been criticized, especially the father, which is always an issue in the career. The
mm-hmm.
attitude of the
mm-hmm.
father toward him had made him think that there was something wrong with him, and of course, that's exactly why he couldn't do what he felt passionate about, because he felt it was wrong. So these are the kind of things that show up, and in your case, see, what you do naturally, which is talking, and obviously
mm-hmm.
then you have to be a good listener. And
right,
so those two
right.
things go together, and so that you have a talk show that you've now interacting with people on an emotional level about the issues in their life. See, that's just a natural segue to helping you find out what really would make you happy, and also at the same time, the passion serves other people. You know, they get what they need from you, too.
Yeah.
See, that's
so
the key
true.
To passion. It's not a hobby. It's not like something you do for you that makes you
mm-hmm.
happy. A lot of people will say, well, I love to travel. And I say, yeah, well, the travel business itself is something very different.
Mm-hmm.
And see, put that in together is that if you really love to help people travel, if you love to show them about the beauty of travel, write about it, okay, that means that there's something there for sure. But if
mm-hmm.
it's just you and you like to get on a plane and go to Timbuktu, then that's not your passion. That's what you do for personal reasons.
You know, that's really interesting that you gave that particular example, especially because on Wednesday night I go to Toastmasters in Mill Valley, and I love it. I've been doing it almost 10 years now. I started at the end of 2004. It was something that I was really, really scared to try, but I had been wanting to try for a long time, and I had decided I would finally try it, and I've been in it for a long time now. I was table topics leader on this last Wednesday, and I decided to use as the topics your passion clues and a couple of your off-track clues from your new book, Work with Passion in Midlife and Beyond. And it was funny because I got one of the women that got up to talk said that her passion was travel.
Oh.
And about how she would love to just travel all over the world. And she told us all the different places that she would want to travel. And I even had passion as being the word of the day. And it
uh-huh.
turned out to be a really, really fun table topic session. But the one thing I noticed is that an awful lot of the people were still thinking during this that they could have passions and they could make money. That it was two
right.
totally separate
and that's
things.
That's not true. That's not true.
Yeah. So
it has to be, as you say, it has to be the combination. Like she's, you notice when she was talking, it was all about I.
Right.
When I did
this, I
went here, I went there. And see, that's the tip off that it's not the passion, because the passion is something intensely transformative that wants to make things over, wants to make things better. And that's really you. Like when you talk to people, you're listening and see if you can help them
mm-hmm.
see things a different way or whatever. So the passion is, that's really what's confusing about people when they say, well, I have so many passions. And I'm laughing to myself and say, that's impossible. You know, you can't have many
yeah.
passions. You may have many interests, but what do you have the talent to actually make money at is something different.
Yeah, that's so
and
true.
And so you have to have talent. If you don't have the talent, the natural talent, forget it. I had a client who wanted to be a guitarist, and I asked him one day, I said, well, can you play? You know, because I don't know. I'm not a guitar expert. It's one thing to just dream.
Yeah.
And I asked him if he'd ever put himself in front of professional guitarists, people who made a living at it. No, he had not. And I said, well, that would be my suggestion. So anyway, he did. He arranged. I said, you may have to pay them for their time. Obviously, these are professionals. So he did, and he went to one that was more the classical mode and one that was sort of the rock and roll. And they both told
mm-hmm.
him the same thing. They say, no, this is not what you should be doing. You know, this is something that's your hobby. Well, of course, he was crushed. But then I said to him, well, good, now we can find out what you're really destined to do. Because he had
mm-hmm.
been had this in his mind, like, for 15 years. And so as it turned out, he had this in his mind, you know, this dream.
Oh, in his mind.
Him.
He had it in his mind. Yeah,
but
he
never really, really checked it out. And this is what a lot of people do. They don't put themselves in front of a true professional who can say to them, yes, you do have the talent, yes, and you will have this many years before you can be good enough to make money. And
mm-hmm.
so anyway, what he found out through the process that I use with my clients, which I suspected, was that his gift was in finances. His father was a CPA, though, and he hated his father,
mm-hmm.
so he didn't want to go into finances because he didn't want to be like his father, and yet that's what he was good at.
Wow.
So he finally
you know,
wound up going into a financial planning business, and he's doing very well, and now he plays the guitar on the weekends.
Well, and that's the thing that I've realized, too, is that there are so many things that you can love to do, and you don't have to do all of them to make a living. In other words, you know, what you're talking about here is a passion as being something that you do where you can also make money. And that's the interesting thing is so many people seem to think, well, I need to find my passion. And then but yet they have this belief, this limiting belief that passion means that you can't get paid for it. So the way you're using it in your books is it's something that you actually can do where you can
Correct.
Get paid to do it.
Well, I'm a businesswoman. I'm not interested in hobbies. If I were interested in hobbies, I'd own a hobby store or something. What I'm interested in is helping people make money and enjoy a happy, profitable life as well as something that's emotionally fulfilling. And I only use myself as an example of that because I believe it because I've done it. And I don't ask my clients to do anything. I haven't first tested on me. So when people
mm-hmm.
say they're interested in things, I make sure that they're not using those as a distraction. Like, for example, someone who socializes a lot and then can't figure out
mm-hmm.
why they can't write the book that they need to write.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'll go right there. I'll say, you've got to stop socializing. You can't do both. You're going to have a real mediocre product if you think you can write and also be in a bunch of clubs and have parties and all of that. You know, your introverted self is the writer self, and that part of you needs quiet time alone. But see, there you have the issue of self-discipline and the lack of
mm-hmm.
commitment. You know, this I can talk about all of my life that I want to be a writer, but I don't write.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that's
yeah.
I'm tough with people. You know, I don't let them fool me and say, you know, because they're wasting their money, and then they're wasting my time. So I try to get the story first. Say, okay, what is the pattern
mm-hmm.
that's running through this life? What is this person actually capable of doing and succeeding at it? And what
mm-hmm.
do they need to stop doing that they're doing that isn't working? Like if they're drinking and over socializing and their house is full of clutter and all of that stuff. All of that stuff has to be corrected if they want to succeed.
That's so true. Well, one of the reason that I had resisted for a long time getting life coach training because, you know, I kept thinking, well, you know, I just want to help people by talking with them and by writing my book, which I did, The Art of Living a Life You Love. And what I found is that for me, I resisted the life coach thing for a long time because of when I was working in the hair business. I did love talking with the people all the time, but I got too much of that, and I felt like I could only help one person at a time. That was one of the things I didn't like about it, besides the fact that it had all the chemicals and was focused on basically the outside of the people. But I found that, then I started realizing that with the coaching, you can do group coaching and you can do workshops and do other things. So it's not like you have to always just do one person at a time. And that then it started appealing to me more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, part of you is an extrovert and needs that stimulation. And see, if you were more of an introvert way over, I mean, nobody's all introvert or all extrovert.
Mm-hmm,
most it's a bell curve, you know, but 10, it sounds to me like you're more like about a 6 or 7 toward the extroverted. So that part of you needs more people interaction, where obviously you couldn't have been a hairdresser because a real introvert would be, they get exhausted by that much interaction with people. So again, it gets back to knowing who you are, and your body will tell you that, you know, how much you can tolerate being around people, which doesn't mean that an introvert doesn't connect with people. They just have to do it on a deeper and a more regulated basis. You know, they can't work in a cubicle in a big corporation. Introverts, you know, it's just death to them because they pick up on everything that's going on all around, and they need an office where they can close the door. And sometimes that's really solves the career problem, you know, is that they don't know that they're being overwhelmed. They think that one of my clients said, I'm just so depressed. I said, no, you're not. You're overstimulated.
Oh.
She didn't know that was what was wrong with her.
Well, you know, you've said something that I've realized for a long time that I think is a really important thing for people to remember is that people seem to go, oh, I'm an introvert, or oh, I'm an extrovert. And really all of us have part of that.
Yeah.
I think, you know, part of the introvert and
yeah,
part of the extrovert. It's just how much of it
correct
is really right for us. And
well,
yeah, I love having time alone, but I also love having time with people. In fact, I kind of go Borneo if I have a little too much of one or a little too much of the other, you know.
Right. Well, that's, again, most people, they're on that bell curve somewhere, but usually it's going to be one part of the personality is going to lead. If you're an introvert, let's say you're 4 on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being most introverted, 10 being most extroverted, if you're 4, then you're going to be
mm-hmm.
okay being around people 40% of the time, but 60% of the time you're going to need time to yourself. And that's perfectly okay because during that 60%, a lot of creativity can be indulged in. You know, that's the kind of person who loves to do research. They like to work alone. They can even be in sales, for example, because they can
mm-hmm.
have a territory going from place to place where they make sales calls. I mean, that's a myth that introverts can't be good salespeople. They make wonderful salespeople if they can control their schedule.
Interesting.
See,
that's really
the key, is that you have to be able to control your schedule. And that's part of the passion, too. See, these are all things that you have to take into consideration. It's rather like Goldilocks, you know, which bed is going to be just the right one. And like you,
mm-hmm.
most people have to try several beds before they get it right.
You
don't find the passion, bam, just right off the bat, unless you're somebody like an athlete where it's pretty obvious when you're 9 years old that you're going to be a champion tennis player.
Yeah.
See, that's different.
and if you were born into an environment where you were encouraged to do what you happen to have a passion for to begin with, and were helped to do
that's true. It makes it a lot easier. But still, it's amazing how many the lengths at which people will go to avoid feeling. Because passion is going to drag you into that emotional realm, and for a lot of people, and the emotions are just of other people. Emotions of life, the emotional aspect of life, it's very tough, you know, because we're trained and educated to think. Mm-hmm. And our thinking mind is, yeah, pretty well developed. But our feeling nature, and many people I have found, they can be brilliant, and but their feeling nature, I have many clients in the computer industry, and, you know, they just never really develop that part of them, and they don't see that that side of them needs attention, you know, to develop it. It's, so, again, it's each individual is different. No, there's no one thing that people need to do, which, again, back to why I use the autobiography, because I used to do a lot of testing when I first started, and those are good. They can reveal certain things, but nothing reveals like the autobiography, like in your own case, where you really see your grandparents, your mother, your father, your siblings, you see the chain of events and the choices, that, especially right around puberty. It's very important to look there, because that's when we make a lot of decisions about how our life is going to turn out. And that sets the script in motion. Like if you're in an alcoholic family, the alcoholic family script is, what's the use? We're just, you know, there's just no hope. So underneath there's a lot of despair. And that family, why? Because nothing ever gets any better.
Yeah, because they're numbing their feelings, and so they're not allowing themselves to feel the feelings or to take responsibility for their choices, like what you're talking about self-discipline. It's basically about being willing to take responsibility for the choices that you make and the results that you get.
Yeah, well, sometimes we need help because life is difficult. It's not easy, and I think a lot of people, when they think, oh, well, you love your work, everything is okay, no. It just means if you love it, it makes confronting problems a lot easier because you're determined to make it work. You're not going to leave it. It's like when you get in a relationship, if you want a romance, then you just date people. But if you really want to learn how to love, you have to have a commitment. Because it was within the confines of commitment that we discover who we are.
Interesting. Yeah, that's interesting. Now, in your newer book, Work with Passion in Midlife and Beyond, you have, as I mentioned earlier, passion clues and off-track clues. And I'd like to read the passion clues real quickly and then the off-track ones, and then talk to you about that a little bit. Okay, passion clues. Number one, you would do the work even if you did not get paid for it. Number two, mastery is your goal. Number three, you are transformed as you do the work. Number four, you're not aware that time is going by. Number five, you're paid to be who you are. I love those. Those all are so true from what I've discovered after knowing you and reading your books. And then the off-track clues, number one, money is your priority. Number two, you worry about what others would think. Number three, you focus on the end result, not the process. Number four, you take shortcuts to achieve your outcomes. And number five, you take on more than you can handle. So those, you know, people can read about more about those in your book, Work with Passion in Midlife and Beyond. And I love the subtitle, Reach Your Full Potential and Make the Money You Need. Because, you know, the money we need isn't necessarily the money we want. Is that why you called it that?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, often we don't know what our needs are. I have one client, I said, if you were in the line in Safeway, the checkout stand, and they had a big display there with needs, you just look at it and say, oh, well, that's not for me. She didn't know what her needs were because obviously she's always taking care of everybody else. And that, again, is taking on more than you can handle, and so then you don't have any energy or time. Yes, yeah, so all those off-track signals are very important, and a lot of people tell me over the years, if I just had all the money I wanted, then I could do what I love, and it's actually just the opposite. The people who really make money is that they – studies have been done on this, where the people who really wind up being comfortable financially, they don't try to look for ways to make money. They look for something that they're really interested in mastering. As I said, one of the clues, they really want to get good at it, like the guitar player. See, he was just diddling around with his garage for 15 years with his guitar, but it wasn't until he got into professionals who spent 6 hours a day practicing that he found out that, you know, this is not what he was really wanting. He was avoiding. He was using the, oh, well, someday I want to be a guitarist. He wasn't dealing with the emotional issue behind that, which is fear that he was just like his father. Of course, he wasn't just like his father, but he had the same talent.
I know, it's interesting how so many people seem to worry about that they're going to be just like their father or just like their mother or just like their grandfather or grandmother or somebody, you know, instead of realizing that they're a unique being of their own. You know, that's not
we don't feel unique as long as we're attached. You know, that's really why I tell people when they're writing to call their parents and the grandparents by their first names rather than mom and dad and grandma and grandpa, because these emotional bonds, attachments, I'm not against, you know, true emotional bonds to people and families, but in a lot of families, the attachment is unhealthy. And so one of the ways to gain objectivity is to call them by their first names, and then when I work with them in my sessions, we talk about them as Joe and Jane, you know, not mom and dad. It's amazing how that technique helps people to become more objective and see them as people, which then in turn allows them to become more individuated, which, by the way, is the work of the second half of life, is becoming an individual. And that's, you wrote about that. Many well-known people in the psychology world have said that the self, you know, and that's really what I stress in the second book, which is why I wrote it, you know, for people who are older, the self doesn't really start to emerge until we're in our, well, it really starts around 37, and then it really kicks into gear around 42. And so those are the years, you know, where people are going to feel alienated and weird, to use one of my clients' words, unless they're in tune with the shift that's going on internally, you know, which is the shift in values. Like you said, there was something about, you know, you knew the chemicals were bothering you, but you knew the actual function of hair wasn't really intriguing to you.
No, it still isn't. You know, I appreciate people with no hair as much as I do with beautiful hair. It has to do with who they are inside and what they choose to think and do. Mm-hmm. You know, we're running out of time. This always goes so quickly for me. Speaking of time going by quickly when you're doing what you have a passion for, and it just flies by. Next week, I just need to say that next week on September 17th, my guest will be Robert Crane. And we'll be talking about songwriting, the West Coast Songwriters events, and the music Robert here is calling him. We'll also be talking about the process of songwriting and how you can work in creative collaboration with other songwriters. And, you know, the interesting thing also is that Robert Crane has been writing songs and performing and helping to lead the West Coast Songwriters here in Marin. And he also does some kind of accounting or CPA. I'm not sure exactly what that is because I don't ever talk to him about that, but we talked to him about the music because we met him through a bunch of coincidences that I don't have time to go into, where we got invited to join the West Coast Songwriters. So we've been going to those events at the Phoenix and San Rafael. I think it's the third Tuesday of each month, and it's been so much fun.
Music is very mathematical.
That's true. I had heard that. You know, before we go, we only have a little while left, and you have a free event coming up in San Francisco on the 18th. Is that right?
Yes, I do. I'll be speaking at the main library in the Civic Center about the whole issues that we've been discussing here more deeply. And I also do an interactive, you know, like I have people in the audience respond and I work with them right in front of the group. Just a lot of fun. So it's on the 6 o'clock and there's good parking there. So everybody who'd like to come, that would be great.
And they can probably find that on your website, right? Workwithpassion.com.
They can also go to the San Francisco Main Library website, and they have it posted under their events.
Fantastic. Nancy, it's been such a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much for writing your books and for being on my show. I really, really appreciate it. You are loving your music.
Yeah, I appreciate being asked. Thank you for having me.
I want everyone out there to think about, what music do you hear calling you? Are you living the music you hear calling you? If you need help with it, give Nancy a call, give me a call, give someone a call, and have them help you. Nancy, I look forward to the next time I get to talk to you.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye for now, everyone.